thank you very much, Ken. It's a great pleasure to join you here at your 59th annual convention. 59 years of doing great work for working people across Iowa. Congratulations. And as you know, I am basing my run for the president on bringing home the resources that we're spending overseas. I voted against the Iraq war, and now this war just seems to go on and on and on and on. And I'd like to end the war and bring back the resources here for our education, for our infrastructure, for our health care, as well as make it peaceful in those countries where these wars just go on and on. But I'm also an advocate of labor peace. And I have been, as Ken said, throughout my whole career. As a mayor, I had AFSCME as my municipal employees. The Firefighters Union had to work well with the Firefighters Union, FOP, my police union. We had laborers in my city of Warwick, and our teachers were represented by the AFT. And we had labor peace in our city. It's important. It's just as important as peace around the world. When I was senator, of course, I was involved in many, many issues. One was when the new Homeland Security Department came in, there was a big effort to make sure they were not given the right to collectively bargain. And I was a Republican back then. But I was on the side of labor fighting for the right to bargain for the new Homeland Security Department. I was a consistent vote against vouchers. There was many labor votes that came up. One, I saw a Teamster out front before coming in, and there was a cross-border Teamster issue that I was the deciding vote on in favor of labor on that issue. Letter carriers. I had some letter carrier votes as a senator. Glad to help out there. And then I became governor, and previous administration tried to fire teachers in one of our poorer communities, Central Falls. It made national news. They're going to fire all the teachers. I got that resolved. Of course, we had to negotiate all the union contracts as governor. We did pension reform. So I like to say I've been a friend of labor at all levels of government. I'm the only candidate running for president, Republican or Democrat, that has been a mayor, a governor, and United States Senator. So for all those experiences, I've always been a friend of labor, so it's great to join you here. I'm proud to represent the issues that you care about and look forward to the questions you have and hope I can answer them to your satisfaction. So thank you for having me here.
Senator Chafee, I get the privilege of asking you the first question, but first of all, let me thank you for joining us here.
Thank you for your years
of working with us and your friendship. My question is, would you support raising the federal minimum wage and to what level? And what specific steps would you take to raise wages of all Americans, not just those making minimum wage?
I like to say actions speak louder than words. And my actions on behalf of the minimum wage have been consistent. And as a senator, I voted every time to raise the minimum wage. It was a big issue in my time as senator. And as governor, we raised it three times in my four-year term, raised the minimum wage. So actions do speak louder than words. Others might say they will do it, but I've done it. And as far as what it should be, I think different communities are different. Obviously, Los Angeles and New York, the cost of living is much higher than Des Moines. And so I think there should be some community involvement in what that minimum wage should be. As far as the third part, what can we do about just raising wages? I'm a big advocate of education and education programs that have proven to work. I'm running for president, so I'm now interested in federal programs and Head Start, Pell Grants. These are federal programs that have proven to work, and we should put the resources into these programs. And of course, another area should be the crushing student debt that our youngsters are experiencing. And to address the interest on that student debt, I think would be the first area that I'd like to address. Keep those low interest loans. So if students want to defer, which they should, if they want to do something different, join the Peace Corps. As Ken said, I went and worked on the horse racetrack as a blacksmith after graduating from college. It would have been difficult to pay my student loans. So if you can keep that interest down, so those students that want to defer their loans and have life experiences that you sometimes can only have when you're young, I'd be very in favor of that.
know you spoke a little bit about the infrastructure, but my question says the United States lags behind other nations when it comes to investing in infrastructure. What specific infrastructure improvements need to be made for the United States to be competitive globally, and how would you fund them?
Well, when I talk about ending the wars, this is one area where we have to bring back those resources back here. We had the Amtrak derail in Philadelphia, bridges collapsing. There's not a consistent funding formula anymore for the Highway Trust Fund. As Ken said, I served on the Environment and Public Works Committee and was very involved in rewriting the highway reauthorization when I was in the Senate. And it comes up every 6 years. And the what they call the Prius effect, the cars are getting more gas mileage, and so the money coming in from the gas tax to the Highway Trust Fund is not as robust as it used to be. But the needs are still there. And so we just have to find a better funding stream. Ending these wars is my proposal, and bring those. The Iraq war is going to cost us $6 trillion. Just think of what we could spend on our roads, bridges, dams, rail lines, all that infrastructure here in our country.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, Senator, Governor. Thanks so much for being with us this afternoon.
Got three hats. Thank you.
Our immigration system is broken, tearing families apart and creating a shadow economy that allows unscrupulous employers to exploit workers. What would you do to resolve this important issue?
It's another actions speak louder than words opportunity. When I was in the Senate, John McCain from a border state of Arizona and Ted Kennedy, liberal senator from Massachusetts, got together and had a really good immigration bill, McCain-Kennedy. And there were only 9 original co-sponsors. And I was one. It was bipartisan. There were only 9 of us. And I was one. None of the other candidates running for president were original co-sponsors. That was 2005, when it probably wasn't as popular now to do something about a path to citizenship for the shadow economy. And so I'm very, very proud to be early advocate of finding a path to citizenship for these people, 11 million, 12 million people. And it had border security. It had learning English. It was a good bill by John McCain and Ted Kennedy. It was a good bill. Unfortunately, we couldn't get it passed, but I would take it right off the shelf and with minor modifications. That's how good it was, in my opinion. Had all the addressing all the issues that are still relevant today. Sadly, Ted Kennedy's not with us anymore.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Governor Chafee.
I just had one more thing, if I could. And as governor, the immigrant community supported me for governor, and they asked for 3 things. And the first was there was an E-Verify. The previous governor had an E-Verify, very onerous E-Verify system. They said, repeal E-Verify. And I said, I'll do that as my first act as governor. They wanted in-state tuition for undocumented instead of out-of-state tuition to go to our public institutions, higher education. They wanted driver's licenses. And I said, I'll do my best. I'll promise to do the first on E-Verify. I'll do my best on the other 2. And we did get in-state tuition, the DREAM Act, passed. And it was very, very contentious because the economy was bad in Rhode Island. And we had a room similar to this with 500 people opposed to it and another 5 from the immigrant community in favor of it. And the Board of Education voted in favor of it in that volatile, emotional setting. I was very, very proud of them. I lobbied hard. On driver's license, we couldn't get that passed. We were researching it. But I have a good record across the board on standing up for my word. I said I was going to do it, and I did it. And we got the in-state tuition passed also. We need to do something about the shadow economy. And also have border security so we don't have another 11 or 12 million 15 to 20 years from now. Do the best we can anyway. Sorry to interrupt.
That's quite all right, Governor.
I don't want to take an opportunity to miss.
too many Americans are being robbed of a secure retirement by anti-worker CEOs and politicians. This is a 2-part question. Do you favor any changes to Social Security, Medicare, or pensions? And if so, what are they? And what other ideas do you have to ensure that Americans have an opportunity to retire with dignity?
That's very, very important. and it's not what it used to be, where you could retire with dignity. And as far as Social Security, I would propose that we have a donut hole from the present cap and institute it up $250,000, open to discussion, and have it come back at a lower percent. I know that was talked about back when I was in the Senate also, when the President Bush was talking about privatizing Social Security. There were those of us that were saying, yes, we're part of that demographic tidal wave, the baby boomers that are going to come into the Social Security system, and we'd have to do something about it. It is happening. It's a tsunami that's going to come in of us baby boomers, and we have to have retirement security. And that donut hole was discussed. And also, Richard Posen was an advocate of how we address the inflation, whether it's on wages or on inflation. And that I would also do, the Posen plan, it was called. But look at the donut hole and the Posen plan, I think, with two areas of reform for Social Security. So we could have
retirement. And what about Medicare?
Medicare, I voted against the prescription drug benefit, which we have one of the highest elderly populations in Rhode Island, because we weren't doing anything to reform Medicare while we were putting another brick on the load, another $800 billion, almost $1 trillion cost to Medicare. So I am concerned about the vitality of the Medicare for future generations, even to the political expense of voting against the Part D prescription drug benefit in a high elderly state, because I want the program to be there for future generations. So certainly I'm committed to that and in any way possible. Means testing has been, why should Bill Gates' mom get Medicare? Called means testing, maybe look at that, be open to that, all the different ways to keep it solvent. It's a great program. What are we celebrating, 50 years of great program. It's worked so well for so many millions of Americans for so many decades, 50 years, five decades. Proud to be a part of making sure it's there for future generations.
My turn.
Thank you. Thank you.
Senator, now we'll turn to one of our favorite subjects, that's trade. Do you support the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and if so, why? And if not, would you make changes to it, or would you scrap the agreement completely? And the third thing is, what standards would meet your criteria for trade agreements with other countries?
In the Senate, I voted for Central American Dominican Republic, CAFTA, it was called, CAFTA-DR. And as this was came into the news, I don't like to be a flip-flopper. I like to be consistent, but I did look at it. And I do think, as I did in CAFTA-DR, that trade is going to happen. It's going to happen if we can get rules on labor and on the environment and on intellectual property and currency manipulation, some of these issues. I know this is a big issue for AFL-CIO, and I'm supportive on many, many issues, but I like to be consistent. I don't like to be a flip-flopper, and I have been in favor of CAFTA-DR, and I am in favor of Trans-Pacific Trade Partnership, TPP, and the fast track. So I just think we get the rules, work with the countries. The world's growing a lot smaller. The world is flat, as the saying goes, the cliche goes, and trade is going to happen. I also will note that I looked up the NAFTA vote, and a lot of farm senators voted for NAFTA, including Senator Harkin. So labor friends can occasionally differ. I think Paul Simon voted for NAFTA. A number of farm senators voted for NAFTA. I'm a good labor friend.
I just might add, though, Senator, that after voting for NAFTA, each and every one of them gave their regrets and said it was the worst vote of their careers.
Okay, I stand corrected. I'll have to look at CAFTA then. I think Tom Harkin voted for CAFTA. Should we check that? Senator Harkin, I think you voted for CAFTA when I was in the Senate. We'll check that. I think it's a form vote.
The jobs that public employees perform at all levels of government are important, yet we continue to underfund them. How would you address this issue, and would you end practices such as sequestration without imposing further cuts to federal employees' pay and benefits?
As I said, my career at the local, state, and federal level has always been in favor of the employees. I'm a firm believer. You're just not going to have a good organization if your employees aren't motivated and buy into what everybody's trying to accomplish. And that comes with wages and benefits. It's not too complicated. And that, as mayor, I was very involved in making sure our employees were well compensated and their benefits were protected. In the Senate, I consistently voted in that way. As governor, I want a motivated state employee workforce. They were so demoralized when I came in, because the previous governor would go on talk shows and hammer the state employees. And I just took a different path. These are the people that are going to make things happen, make our state prosper. And they should be well compensated with good benefits and good retirement. It's common sense.
Around 11% of the workforce in America is unionized and have the ability to bargain with their employers. What changes in law or federal rules and regulations would you support to ensure that every American who wants to join a union is able to do so free from employer interference?
Well, the laws that have been, and I looked up a little bit to make sure I had the right laws, the Fair Labor Standards Act, 1938, the National Labor Relations Act, which has been around for so many years, the Civil Rights Act, OSHA from 1970. These are the core of the labor laws, federal labor laws. And some of them require appointments to these boards, and that's the key. Getting pro-labor appointees on these important boards that are going to make some of these decisions that are out of legislative and executive hands into these boards. And so that's what I've learned as mayor and governor in particular. These boards, I just mentioned the education board that approved the in-state tuition. In the state, we had our labor relations board. They are powerful. And if you make good appointments, they're going to make good decisions. So that's very, very important, who you appoint. And you're standing up for these laws, these federal laws that have been the pillars of the protecting workers for so many years and so many decades. Fair Labor Standards Act, the National Labor Relations Act, Civil Rights Act, OSHA. They've been there for so many, doing such good work for so many years.
Senator Tammy Baldwin recently introduced a bill that tries to slow down the revolving door between the executive branch and Wall Street, in part by shutting down the golden parachutes people get when they leave big banks and go into government. Would you support legislation like this, and what other steps would you take to curb Wall Street excess?
Yes, absolutely, I would support that. And it's just scandalous what's happening with executive competition and the corruption between the, I don't know if corruption may be a strong word, but the coziness between the executive compensation boards that then grant the executives their pay, and they won't stay on the board if they don't do the right thing, is the insinuation. It's just, how does this exist in this country? These enormous salaries at the same time the company's sometimes not even doing well. Golden parachutes. It's a scandal for this country. Something should be done, and support what Tammy Baldwin's doing. It should be done internally by the shareholders, but it's just so hard with the coziness that exists between these compensation boards and the executives. You rock the boat, you don't stay on. It's not right.
Well, I think that's all the questions, and we appreciate you taking time to answer those. You now have 10 minutes for closing remarks.
Well, thank you. Good questions. I hope I answered them well. I'm proud of my experience at the local, state, and federal level. Just a few things that I have been involved in the labor movement. I breezed over them, but as I came in as mayor, the previous mayor had gotten into a dispute with our teachers, and it got so bad. The economy was kind of rocky at that time in the early 90s, and the teachers went on strike. First they had work to rule, then they went on strike. The judge ordered them to jail, so we actually had sixth grade teachers in handcuffs going off to jail in my city. It was just terrible for the community. You couldn't sell a house there. There were teacher bashing groups that came up, citizens groups that came up that would fill a room like this and have teacher bashing sessions. It was terrible. And when I got elected, I beat the mayor that was warring with the teachers. And the first thing is I did, and it took a while, is to get this resolved. And it took some resources, but in the end, I was able to do it by working, getting the resources. The teachers, they didn't have a whole lot of trust with anybody in the mayor's office. They picketed some of my fundraisers. It never bothered me. That's the First Amendment right. Of course you can picket. That's our First Amendment. We just kept working at it, and finally we got a settlement that was fair to the taxpayers, fair to the union that they had agreed to, the teachers' union. And then I had to call the city council. It was a Sunday when it came to this agreement after about a year and a half. And the city council had a 9-member city council, and they all, except one, agreed to it. But then as my election came closer, they started to peel away. It started to get political. But I was able to hold 5 of those council members. It was a 5-4 vote to get that settled. And so I'm very proud of my diligence and my tenacity of just making sure that we got this resolved for my community, my city. And dealing with the city council and the different politics that were taking place, we held in there and got it done, got the 5 votes. And since then, there's been labor peace in the city ever since. It was a landmark after different right to work, work to rule, and all the trouble that causes the community. We got it resolved, and it's been good ever since. Then I mentioned the Homeland Security, my vote there. That was another contentious one because September 11th had just happened. And so people were angry. And they were scared, if we all remember, after September 11th. And so it wasn't easy to be standing up at that time to say, of course the new Department of Homeland Security should have bargaining rights. And I was under a lot of attack for that. I was a Republican back then, and the Republicans were attacking that. You're with the terrorists. You don't want a Homeland Security, but you're holding up the vote on Homeland Security. You're with the terrorists. That's what was happening back then. But I held in there, had the courage to say, no, this is what's right for the employees to have their bargaining rights. And then I mentioned the pension reform as governor. These are 3 things that stand out in my 3 levels of government. And I always wanted union buy-in. Yes, of course we had to reform the pension system. We couldn't afford it going out. We had to adjust age of retirement. We had to address the COLAs, the cost of living, maybe re-amortization, maybe look at a hybrid. I wanted buy-in by the union. I did not want what happens in some of these other states. It got a little rocky for a while, but in the end, I was able to go to mediation and get union buy-in, and we've just finally resolved all that pension system. Unfortunately, after I left office, but I set in motion the mediation that led to union buy-in, union agreement to the pension reform in all those areas I mentioned, age of retirement, cost of living. So those are, you get a sense of who I am by looking at those stories, dealing with the teachers in Warwick, dealing with the Homeland Security under the criticism of September 11th and fear and anger that were taking place then. Working with to make sure we did the right thing on pension reform. I'll walk through fire to do the right thing. And that's why I'm running for president. This is a very, very important election coming up, 2016. Just think of the ramifications of 2016. Supreme Court, could be a vacancy on the Supreme Court, how important that is. We talked about disparity of wealth issues, what that's doing to this country. As people struggle to make it, retirees struggle to have dignity in their retirement, while the ultra-wealthy have their 10 houses and their private jets. We talk about climate change. Imagine what it would be like if the Republicans took over the White House and kept the Senate and the House on environmental issues. Of course, we'll work with the coal industry, talking with your president here, who came up through that, in mine workers, how we can make sure this important part of our economy, with the Saudi Arabia of coal here, and have addressed climate change. We can do those together. Affordable Care Act, imagine what would happen to the Affordable Care Act. This election is important. Social Security, we mentioned, the reforms there, education, what we can do with Pell Grants, Head Start, all the great beneficial social programs, infrastructure. This is all what's at stake in the 2016 election. Immigration reform. Just listen tonight in the Republican debate of what they're going to do to the immigrant community. Not Democrats. We do the right thing. And lastly, war. The Republicans are going to fall all over themselves to be more bellicose, more belligerent with the world. And I want to end the war and bring those resources back home. I call it peace through prosperity. Back to our infrastructure, back to our health care, back to our education, all the good things, our environment, and, well, for their countries. You see in the news the refugees flooding from these war-torn areas, destabilizing areas around the world, as you and I would flee beheadings and wars and try and get away from it with your family. So I say to you, if you are considering who you're going to support for president, there are three areas you can look at. First of all, my record, which I've shared with you here. Secondly, my character, my courage, and my honesty. In all my time in public service, I've never had any scandals. I make good appointments to my administrations, and we've been scandal-free, high ethical standards. And lastly, the vision for the future, those three things. Look at my record, my character, and my vision of prosperity through peace, bringing home the resources and ending these wars overseas. I'm the peace candidate, not only abroad, but with labor also. So thank you for having me here, and have a great rest of the convention. I know you're going to have some good speakers. All the Democratic candidates are good. We're very lucky as a party. All the candidates you're going to hear from, they're top-notch. So thank you very much. We've got to win in 2016.